Kerrion led the way into Base 13. The great metal entrance doors hung limply from their supports. They moved jerkily apart under Kerrion's hands, all power gone. Inside, what they could see of the lobby was a mess. The light from the open doorway didn't penetrate far into the centuries-old gloom. The place looked to have been thoroughly trashed, with shattered furniture, dents and cracks in the metal floor, and even some holes in the outer wall, through which some light reluctantly entered. There didn't seem to be any power, no working lights or tech. On the very edge of the light, they could just make out an old-fashioned reception console. Lewis and his companions hesitated just inside the door, waiting for their eyes to adjust to the gloom. None of them liked the feel of the place. They could sense all those piled-up years from the battle days of Empire, just waiting to ambush them. Base 13 smelled of death. Kerrion walked forwards into the dark, his face entirely calm. He stopped by the reception console and passed one hand slowly over it. Deep within the base, old systems sluggishly awakened, and lights reluctantly flickered on one by one, until the reception area was full of a kind of twilight glow that, if anything, made the place seem even spookier. Brett started to edge backwards until Rose took him firmly by the arm. Comm panels on the reception desk turned on, and a single view screen glowed into life on the opposite wall, putting itself on standby.
I don't get it. If the base was shut down 200 years ago, where's all this power coming from?
From me.
He shouldn't have been able to hear her from such a distance, but no one was really surprised that he could. His hands moved slowly over the comm controls, as though reluctantly remembering skills long since abandoned when he became Ashrai. The view screen on the wall cleared to show a fleet captain standing at strict attention on the bridge of his ship. His uniform had been pressed and cleaned to within an inch of its life and helped to distract from his young face.
Probably one of Finn's creatures, newly promoted just for this mission.
An experienced fleet officer would have had more sense than to come to Unseelie. The captain looked startled for a moment at the unexpected face before him, but then he thrust out his jaw and glared truculently from the viewscreen.
This is Captain Kamal of the Imperial Star Cruiser Hector on official business. Identify yourself.
I am Kerrion of the Ashrai. Why have you come to Unseelie, Captain? You must know we do not welcome visitors.
You have given sanctuary to those most notable traitors, Lewis Deathstalker and Jessamine Flowers, and their associates. All are guilty of crimes against humanity. I have orders to bring them back to Logris dead or alive. I require you to assist me in this matter. And with regard to your veiled threat, 5 Star Cruisers now orbit your world. The Empire goes where it will to do its will. You will cooperate in the name of King and Parliament to face the consequences.
He is not my king. And your Parliament has no authority here. This is Unseelie, home to the Ashrai. This is not a human place. And you should not have come here. Leave while you still can.
Captain Kamal looked like he was going to explode.
Who the hell do you think you are to speak to me that way? I represent the Empire. I speak in humanity's name.
And I am Kerrion, investigator, traitor, Ashrai. I bring bad luck. I am the destroyer of nations and of worlds. With Owen Deathstalker and Captain John Silence, I walk the breathing corridors of the Madness Maze. I speak for Unseelie. Leave or die. You have no other choices.
Lies, defiance, and open threats. You will come to regret this insolence before I have you executed. My pinnaces are already landing, carrying enough war machines, gravity barges, and armed troops to ensure that if the aliens do interfere, they will be made to regret it. I will have the traitors one way or another. I don't know who you really are, Sir Kerrion, but no doubt my interrogators will drag it out of you later, at their leisure.
He had more to say, but Kerrion shut down the comm panels, and the view screen went blank. Kerrion stared thoughtfully into space as Lewis and the others came slowly forwards to join him at the reception console. Carrion's eyes seemed very far away.
Sorry to have dragged you into our mess, Sir Carrion. I didn't think they'd track us down this quickly. Lead us back to our ship, and we'll get the hell out of here. They'll never catch us once we're off the ground. The Hereward's got speed and stealth capabilities you wouldn't believe, though I'd rather you didn't ask why. I think the sooner we're gone, the better. We don't want to start a war between the Empire and the Ashrai.
Too late. Hundreds of pinnaces are falling toward Unseelie. The Star Cruisers are firing their disruptor cannon from orbit to blast clearings big enough for the pinnaces to land in. I can hear the trees screaming, dying. The Ashrai are gathering. Let the Empire forces come. None of them shall leave here alive.
Carrion turned suddenly to look at Lewis, who almost flinched at the dark, alien, impersonal power in that gaze.
But you must understand this, Deathstalker. Our audience is over. What we do now, we do for ourselves. We will not fight on your behalf. Your fate, your mission, are nothing to us. Return to your ship and leave if you can. Find Owen if you can. We want nothing to do with humanity or the Empire. We preserve ourselves to face the terror when it comes. Goodbye, Deathstalker. Good luck. And if you do find Owen, remember to mention me to him.
That's it? We came all this way just for that. What's the matter with you? The whole of humanity is under threat of extinction.
You say that like it's a bad thing. Humanity is currently invading my world again. You always were a selfish, brutal race. Perhaps something better will arise to replace you.
You don't really think you can stop the terror on your own, do you?
We stopped the Recreated.
With Owen's help. You owe us, Sir Carrion. You owe me through my ancestor's name. Give us safe escort and protection back to our ship, at least. It's a long way back to the Hereward. And you can bet Kamal will have located it by now and sent troops to block our way. Damn it, at least show us what we'll be facing.
Carrion didn't move, but the view screen on the wall flared into life again. Whole sections of the metallic forest were exploding, the huge trees shattered by the energy beam stabbing down from orbit. The scene changed to show countless pinnaces punching through the cloud layer, transport ships carrying everything the Empire needed to make war on Unseelie. The scene changed again, showing war machines lumbering out of the cargo bays of landed pinnaces. Great hulking monstrosities of gleaming steel, studded with guns. Gravity barges rose slowly into the air, shimmering with force shields as they plowed their way through the tightly packed metal trees. Troops disembarked in strict order. Imperial Marines wore the Scarlet Cross of the Church Militant on their battle armor. They moved out, fanning through the forest, relentless as army ants.
I should have known. Vince packed the troops with his own people. When I'll get you 10, they're Neumann as well. Pure humanity, Sir Carrion. A new creed since your day. Lionstone's illegitimate children, who believe the only good alien is a dead alien. And the Scarlet Cross means they're religious fanatics. I think we can safely assume they're more interested in bringing us back dead than alive.
Talk about overkill! A whole army just for us? It's not fair! Ooh, my stomach hurts.
About time I got some healthy exercise.
Rose was smiling, and her eyes were shining.
The odds just make it more of a challenge.
Yes, it will be good to be killing again. I'm really quite peckish.
Lewis looked at Carrion defensively.
Hey, I didn't get to choose my companions.
Neither did Owen, and he didn't do too badly. And after meeting Ruby Journey, there's not much that shocks me.
Carrion looked at the screen again.
200 years since the overthrow of the Iron Bitch, and nothing's really changed. Poor Jung. He would have been so disappointed.
Can you reopen communications with the Hector? Maybe I can negotiate a truce. Or something.
The view screen flickered, and Captain Kamal was back again. Lewis stepped forward to stand before the screen, automatically adopting his old stance of Paragon authority.
This is Louis Deathstalker. You came here for me, not the Ashrai. My companions aren't important either. You want me. Call off your war and let my companions go, and I will surrender myself to you.
No! Louis, you can't! They'll kill you!
No. If I surrender, Finn wouldn't be able to resist the thought of a show trial. I'm the one he really wants. He needs to see me broken, brought down, to prove in front of everyone that I should never have been made champion instead of him. The rest of you don't matter to him, and you have to be free. You have a mission, remember?
Louis looked back at Kamal.
What do you say, Captain? Just this once, can't we do this the sane and responsible way, so no one has to get hurt?
You've gone soft, Deathstalker. The Church Militant has no mercy for traitors. You, and the Jezebel, and the scum you've attracted, are all going back to Logris, dead or alive. Your word is worthless. You have disgraced your name and your position. You're a vileness in the face of God. No deals, Deathstalker. Only blood can atone for your sins.
Louis nodded slowly.
Nice of you to confirm that you're religious lunatics first and soldiers second. Looney Tunes are always so much easier to outthink than trained professionals. Well, I've got you here, Kamal. Just what are your orders concerning the Ashrai?
Death to unbelievers!
Captain Kamal cut the connection, and the screen went blank again. Louis looked at Carrion.
Well, that was interesting. Short, insulting, and decidedly ominous, but interesting.
Yes, it was.
He slammed the butt of his bone staff on the floor. The lobby suddenly blazed with light as new power thundered through Base 13. Old mechanisms stirred into life again. Computer systems chattered to each other as they came online, driven from their centuries-long sleep by the will of one implacable man. View screens blazed into life all across the lobby, displaying long streams of scrolling data. Brett looked around uneasily.
The generators here are dead, Louis. Powered down hundreds of years ago, you saw the sensor readings. And with this much damage, the base shouldn't be able to function anyway. How the hell is he doing this?
I don't know. And I really don't feel like asking him.
The maze. All the stories, all the legends, and I never really understood. He's no more human now than when he was Ashrai. He's what the maze made him.
There are those who would say I wasn't really human even before I went into the madness maze. I was an investigator, after all. I'm using my old security codes to break into the Hector security files. Back in the day, investigators had all kinds of backdoor access codes to get us information we weren't supposed to have. And it seems a surprising number of them still work.
There haven't been any investigators since Lionstone's time.
Probably a good thing. Ah, what have we here? Personal orders for the captain of the Hector. For his eyes only.
The main view screen lit up again to show Finn Girondal's classically handsome features. He smiled out of the screen, calm and composed.
That's him, the Girondal, the real traitor.
Here are your real orders, my dear Captain. They are not to be discussed with anyone else, even if they are of higher rank in the fleet than you. These orders come from pure humanity. First, you will use all measures necessary to locate and then execute the Deathstalker and all of his companions. You will not accept any form of surrender. Bring back their heads, if possible. Second, you will land your troops on Unseelie and make an example of the Ashrai. They must be punished for their past arrogance. Kill as many as is practical in the time available, and be sure it's all transmitted live. Do good work, Captain. The whole of the Empire will be watching. We need to make a strong impression here. Make it clear to everyone that the old liberal ways are over. And from now on, aliens will do as they're told, or pay the price. When you're done, fill your holds with metal from the trees. I don't see why the Empire should have to cover the expense of this mission. Oh, and Captain, don't let the Deathstalker or any of his companions escape, or don't bother coming back.
Carrion studied the blank screen thoughtfully, while the other studied him.
Well, you can see for yourself. Our enemy is your enemy. We have a common cause.
They will all die here. It's been so long, they've forgotten what the Ashrai can do. Even in the bad old days of Lionstone, it took more than armies and war machines to stop the Ashrai. That's why Captain Silence scorched the planet after all. So the wheel turns and war comes to us again. We will make an example here. And if they dare to try to scorch us again, I will show their petty star cruisers the same face I showed the recreated. I will set their ships on fire against the night.
Oh, great. Another psycho.
Shut up, Brett. Sir Carrion, we don't stand a hope in hell of getting back to our ship unless you protect us. Our enemy is your enemy. You have to help us in Owen's name.
If you're really a Deathstalker, you won't need help. My last ties to humanity died with John's silence. I owe you nothing. Go your own way. I have a war to fight.
Rose surged forward, her sword in her hand, the point aimed at Carrion's throat. Her movements were a blur, inhumanly fast, and still, she never stood a chance. She barely crossed half the space between them when Carrion's staff suddenly blazed with energy, and Rose was plucked out of midair and thrown backwards, hurtling across the lobby to slam into the far wall. Her eyes closed, and she slid slowly down the wall, still somehow clinging to her sword. Brett ran over to her. Lewis faced off against Carrion, his ugly face set in harsh, dangerous lines, his hand hovering over his disruptor. Jessamine moved in close beside him. Saturday looked on from the open doorway, his tail sweeping thoughtfully back and forth.
Keep your attack dog on a leash, Deathstalker, or I'll muzzle her. I think you should leave now. Your name buys you only so much protection. Be about your own business, and let the Ashrai tend to theirs.
Lewis backed slowly away, not taking his eyes off the man dressed in black. Jessamine retreated with him, her hands clenched into impotent fists. Amazingly, Rose was back on her feet, though her eyes were dazed and she was leaning heavily on Brett. Lewis led the way out of Base 13 and back into the metallic forest. And Carrion stood all alone in the reception lobby, surrounded by ghosts, while view screen after view screen showed Imperial attack troops moving on the surface of Unseelie for the first time in over 200 years.
I am Carrion, the destroyer of worlds. I bring bad luck. Ah, John, was it all for nothing in the end?
The Imperial Marines moved slowly through the metallic forest, keeping strict formation, guns at the ready. They spread out across the narrow paths, driven by religious fervor and flying on battle drugs that hadn't been used or needed in centuries, ready to shoot at anything that moved and wasn't them. Most had never been on a non-human world before and were already seriously spooked. It wasn't just the heavier gravity and the huge glowing trees. The whole feel of this world was subtly disturbing, as though they had wandered unknowingly into a psychic minefield. Some thought they could hear voices whispering among the trees, or even singing. Backs crawled with the sensation of being watched by unseen eyes. More than one soldier opened fire suddenly, and couldn't explain why. The sheer size of the trees made them feel like children, creeping along the floor of a nightmare adult world. They were all breathing hard now, sweat slick on their faces, eyes wide with adrenaline and battle drugs and fears they couldn't name. They didn't feel like aggressors anymore. They felt hunted. What had started out as a rapid, confident advance soon slowed to a crawl, and only the rigid discipline of the officers kept them moving, because only the really hardcore fanatics made officer class these days. And yet even they studied the surrounding trees with darting, suspicious eyes. This wasn't at all what they'd been led to expect. And then the Ashrai came, plunging down out of the cloud layer to fly over the packed troops. They were huge and magnificent, with their gargoyle faces and savage fangs and claws, and there were thousands of them. They filled the skies with their gleaming scales and widespread membranous wings, bright as rainbows, with bare teeth and blazing eyes. Down below, the troops lurched to a halt in stunned disarray, despite the furious commands of their officers. Many just stood and pointed up at the sky, their faces slack with awe, their guns forgotten.
It's the dragons! The dragons that flew with the Placido and against the Recreated! No one told us! We can't fight them! Not Owen's dragons!
Some of the troops even threw their guns on the ground. Some were on their knees, praying. And it might all have ended there, but the Church Militant had chosen its officers wisely. Men of steadfast faith, cold discipline, and ruthless nature. They moved calmly among the chattering ranks and shot down any man who wouldn't pick up his gun. A few troopers tried to run, but they didn't get far. The officers strode through the ranks, blood on their armor and on their boots, and no one could meet their fiery gaze. In a few moments, the army had changed to a rabble and back again. And now the Marines hefted their guns, shamed and angry and ready to fight. The officers ordered them to open fire on the Ashrai overhead. None of the energy beams came close to hitting a target. The officers called in the gravity barges, but they were having trouble forcing a way through the tops of the tightly packed trees. The metallic forest was no match for force shields and disruptor cannon, but still it was slow going. And down on the ground, the war machines weren't doing much better. The paths were far too narrow for them, and they had to smash their way through. It didn't help that most of them had been mothballed since Lionstone's day. They forced their way through the forest, leaving wide trails of devastation behind them, their guns moving uselessly back and forth in search of an enemy. Back in Base 13, Carrion watched them advancing on the viewscreen and felt almost nostalgic. He recognized the war machines from the days of the last Ashrai Rebellion. Things had been so much simpler back then. He never doubted which side he was on, even though his oldest friend had become his most hated enemy. But now the Terror was coming, and he had sent the Deathstalker away, probably to die at the Empire's hands. Carrion watched his viewscreens and wondered if perhaps he had forgotten too many important things while he played at being an Ashrai. Lewis knew there was no point in meeting any of the advancing troops head-on. The odds were insanely against him, and only he and Rose possessed energy weapons, so he led his people silently through the metallic forest, sticking to the shadows, and practiced hit-and-run attacks only when he had to. There were a lot of troops blocking the way to the Hereward now, but the narrow pathways split them up into manageable sizes, and there were always some who dragged along behind the others. Lewis reminded himself they were merciless fanatics who served a traitor, and hardened his heart. Some were undoubtedly good men who honestly thought they were in the right, but the fate of the Empire was at stake, and they'd chosen the wrong side. So Lewis came running unexpectedly out of the trees and hit the startled troops from one side, while Rose Constantine hit them hard from the other. Jessamine guarded Lewis's back, Saturday did what he did best, and Brett did his best to keep out of everyone's way. Swords flashed brightly in the diffused light, and blood flew through the air, splashing thickly across the dull gray ground. The last thing the troops had expected was an attack. Lewis cut down the armored Marines with professional ease, his ugly face grim with concentration. He was fast and furious, his every move textbook perfect, and no one could stand against him. Jessamine swung her lighter sword with determined skill, defending Lewis's back, killing when she had to. She kept her face calm and her hand steady, but only her iron will kept fear and panic at bay. It was one thing to play a warrior upon a stage, and quite another to be one. Rose hacked her way through the troops. A happy feeling was in her heart. She towered over most of them, an angel of death in her blood-red leathers, crying out with joy at every death stroke. No one could come close to touching her, and she danced through her opponents with almost contemptuous grace. Her sword swept back and forth, too fast to be seen, leaving a bloodstained trail behind it. Saturday stamped ungracefully through the milling mob, tearing out throats and hearts with his deceptively fast forearms and crunching off heads with his great teeth. The spikes on his furiously lashing tail ripped through men and crushed them inside their battle armor. The Reptiloid tore a savage path through the demoralized troops, as implacable and remorseless as a force of nature. Blood spilled thickly from his grinning mouth. Saturday was having a good time. The carnage lasted only a matter of minutes, just long enough to make a bloody mess out of the straggling troops, and then Lewis led his people back into the trees before the main mass of the army could catch up to them. It was simple enough to scatter and lose their pursuers in the maze of narrow pathways, and then reform later at a prearranged point. The troops had the advantage of superior firepower, but energy weapons weren't much use with so many metal trees in the way to soak up disruptor fire. The army grew increasingly ragged in formation as various groups stumbled among the trees, searching desperately for the traitors who didn't seem to realize that they were supposed to be the prey. Lewis kept up the hit-and-run tactics, splitting the troops into smaller and smaller groups and demoralizing the survivors, and all the time leading his people closer and closer to where they'd left the Hereward. He was too preoccupied to notice the way Jessamine looked at him. She'd never realized how at home her Lewis was in the heart of battle, how unconcernedly he threw himself into butchery and slaughter, smiling his cold smile, like a man coming home at last, because he was a Deathstalker, and this was where he belonged. The last time she'd seen him fight with such pitiless savagery had been during the Neumann riot outside Parliament, when he hadn't seemed to care how many he killed. This wasn't the Lewis she knew, or thought she'd known. Rose Constantine, on the other hand, gloried in the bad odds. It had been a long time since she'd had any real challenge to her abilities, and while killing aliens in the arena was fun, nothing satisfied her like the murder of men. Her heart sang as she danced among the screaming troops, and if she wished for anything, it was for a higher standard of fighter among the troops. Some actually turned and ran rather than try to face her. She killed them too, of course, but it wasn't the same. She had her standards, after all. Saturday romped among the soldiers, claws and jaws soaked in blood. He was huge and fast and strong, and the humans died so prettily. And best of all, there was no one here to tell him not to eat his kills afterwards. Human meat tasted just as good as he'd always known it would. Brett watched it all from among the trees, shaking and shuddering. He would have liked to run, but there was nowhere to run to. So he used Rose's disruptor to snipe from concealment when he thought he had a clear shot, and otherwise did his best not to be noticed.
I don't belong here. I'm not a fighter. My stomach hurts.
It was hit and run, kill the enemy, and vanish into the trees, all the time edging towards the Hereward. They were all getting tired now, except possibly Saturday. Even Rose was slowing, the punishment she'd taken from Carrion finally catching up with her. But still they fought on, even Brett now. With so many armed troops running wildly in the forest, nowhere seemed safe to hide anymore.
Oh, fuck me! Yeah!
So he drew his sword and did his best to look dangerous. Inevitably, his luck ran out sooner rather than later. Three burly troopers cut him off from the others and advanced on him smiling, with drawn swords and force shields buzzing on their arms.
Lewis? Rose? Saturday? Somebody help me!
Brett looked frantically around for an escape route, but they had him surrounded. So he threw himself at them with all the rage and terror of a cornered rat. He caught one Marine by surprise and stabbed him in the groin, and then had to retreat quickly as the other two closed in on him. He swept his sword widely back and forth in front of him and almost dropped it.
Oh, damn it!
Brett threw his sword on the ground and put both his hands as high into the air as he could. He wasn't a fighter, and he was a fool ever to think he could be. But the Marines just kept coming, grinning nastily now. And Brett remembered Finn's words on the base view screen.
You will not accept any form of surrender.
They were going to kill him anyway. And Brett lost his temper. He lashed out with his esp, and his power of compulsion slammed into the mind of the trooper nearest him. And with little effort at all, Breath made the trooper shoot his companion. Hit at point-blank range, the Marine was dead before his body hit the ground. The controlled man just stood there, his face blank, while Brett snatched up the sword he'd thrown away and ran the man through. Brett stood there a while, looking at the three Marines he'd killed. His head ached, his nose was bleeding, but he was alive, and they weren't. He walked openly through the trees, sending his psionic compulsion out before him, and no one could see him. His headache grew steadily worse, and he could feel blood trickling from his nose and welling up from under his eyelids, but he was just too angry to care. Every now and again, he'd reach out with his mind, and one Marine would kill another for no reason. If he'd had time to think, he might have realized this wasn't like him at all. But that wouldn't occur to him until much later. Back at Base 13, the man called Carrion was still studying his view screens and considering his options when another man appeared out of nowhere. Carrion felt his presence immediately and spun around. And then he saw who it was and smiled.
I should have known. With so much of the past repeating itself, it was inevitable that you'd turn up eventually. Hello, John. You're looking good for a dead man. Why is it you only ever come to see me when you want something?
Hello, Sean. It has been a long time, hasn't it? You know, you're all that's left of my past now. Everyone else I knew from the old days is either dead or missing. But still you and I go on, too stubborn to quit and call it a day.
You're the only part of my human past I still care to remember. We're still bound together by all the things we did and shouldn't have done. What do you want this time, John?
Silence indicated the view screen showing Lewis and his companions cutting their way through a stubborn group of Marines. More troops were coming up on them from behind, but Lewis hadn't seen them yet.
You have to help them, Sean. This new Deathstalker and his ragtag friends are perhaps the last hope the Empire's got. The Terror has come at last, and all humanity is threatened with extinction.
You say that like I should care.
Silence considered the view screens.
Imperial troops on Unseelie again. Marines and war machines and gravity barges. Blasted open clearings and broken trees. And good people threatened with death for no good reason. We can't let this happen again, Sean. You heard the Durandal secret orders. The Empire didn't commit this kind of firepower here just to take care of a few traitors. The new regime is using Unseelie as a testing ground. Somewhere to try out their new shock troops and their new battle plans. They must be stopped. They won't be happy until all the Ashwai are dead and gone, and Unseelie is an Empire world again, a symbol of the new order. You have to help the Deathstalker while you still can. The Ashwai can defend their world, but the Deathstalker is the key to defeating the Durandal and all the bad things that are coming. The Deathstalker always is. You can't let him die here.
Carrion considered the view screen before him. When he looked around again, he was alone in the lobby. Lewis leaned heavily against the thick bole of a golden tree. His sword hung down from his hand, too heavy to lift for the moment. Blood dripped from his dented and scored armor, some of it his own. He looked around him, but all the troops he could see were dead. Most of the troops seemed to be moving away. Jessamine was sitting on the ground beside him, her shoulders slumped with exhaustion. Lewis was worried about her. She wasn't built for this. Brett and Rose were sitting together, not far away. Rose had a cloth in her hand and was using it to wipe the blood off Brett's face with slow, careful movements, as though she'd never done anything like that before. Brett sat very still and let her. A little farther away, Saturday was eating something, with great enjoyment. None of the others looked at him. Lewis looked up at the sky, where the Ashrai were still circling.
Damn them. We're here for them, too. Why won't they help? Don't they know the terror will come for them, too, if we can't stop it? We can't die here. Not so early in our quest.
They know. They just don't care. All they care about is killing humans, continuing their war, which should have ended centuries ago.
If only I could have made Carrion listen.
Oh, hell.
Jessamine clambered unsteadily to her feet.
Oh. I may not be much of a fighter, but if there's one thing I've always been able to do, it's make people listen.
She glared up into the sky at the soaring Ashrai and took a deep breath. On some level, she could still hear the song of the trees and the Ashrai, the song of Unseelie. And now she answered it. She sang, and it seemed like the whole world stopped to listen to her. And the Ashrai sang back to her, their voices joining and combining gloriously. And then, the Ashrai dropped out of the glowing sky and fell upon the Imperial troopers surrounding Lewis and his people. The Ashrai came sweeping between the towering trees with almost supernatural grace and were upon them before they could even aim their weapons. Everywhere in the metallic forest, Marines died. And Jessamine watched with tears in her eyes the ugly results of such a beautiful song. Carrion watched it all on his view screens and felt a great weight lift from his heart as the decision was made for him. He should have remembered that Deathstalkers always got their own way, eventually.
Ah, well.
He walked out of Base 13. He lifted his feet from the ground and flew up through the diffused light, punching through the heavy cloud layer and on out into space. He didn't feel the cold, and he didn't need to breathe, and energy crackled up and down the length of his power lance, that ancient, bent weapon. He concentrated, and his speed increased until the first Starcruiser loomed swiftly up before him. Carrion smashed through the ship's force shields like they weren't even there, and then hammered his way through the many layers of steel in under a second before bursting out the hull on the other side. He swung around and hit the ship again, targeting the engines this time, punching holes through the steel decks with joyous ease. Carrion smiled in the cold and the dark as the Heracles slowly tore itself apart, the long steel ship blossoming into bright, actinic flames, and the screams of the dying went unheard in the vacuum of space. Carrion turned his back on the stricken ship as it began its slow descent from orbit, falling slowly but inevitably to its death. The other Star Cruisers were slowly turning and maneuvering to face Carrion as he flew effortlessly towards them. They opened up with every gun they had, but he was Carrion. He was human and Ashrai and so much more. And in the end, nothing was left of the five Star Cruisers but a few radioactive shells. Carrion hung alone in space, looking down on his adopted world, and thought of many things. John Silence walked unhurriedly through the shimmering metal forest. And where he looked, war machines exploded. He looked up, and where his gaze fell upon them, gravity barges blew apart. The Imperial advance slowed and stopped. Troops ran screaming rather than facing, only to meet the Ashrai, deadly and unstoppable, taking back their world from those who would despoil it. They generated localized psi storms wherever they went, altering probabilities so that weapons malfunction and accidents happen, and men fell dead from strokes and embolisms and heart attacks. Finn's people had no Espers to protect them, only a handful of easily overwhelmed S-blockers. And of course, there was Lewis Deathstalker and Jessamine Flowers, Rose Constantine and Brett Random, and the Reptiloid Saturday, and no man could stand against them either. Finn Durandal sent an army to Unseelie, religious fanatics, pure humanity to a man, trained soldiers. And in the end, they never stood a chance, because the Ashrai weren't interested in accepting surrender either. Men had come to Unseelie with death on their minds, and that was what they found. Lewis Deathstalker and his companions finally returned to the clearing in which they'd left the Hereward. It seemed very still and quiet. You'd never know a terrible war had been fought only a short distance away. Lewis and Jessamine nodded to Rose and Brett. And then they all looked in disgust at Saturday, as he gnawed on what was very obviously the remains of a human leg. The Reptiloid realized they were all glaring at him.
Want some?
No!
Saturday was honestly puzzled. He shrugged and casually cracked open the long bone to get at the marrow. Lewis looked away, desperate for something else to concentrate on. All around, they could see and hear the damaged metal trees slowly regenerating, repairing the harm done to them. Soon there would be no traces left to show that humanity had ever come to Unseelie. Lewis thought he could live with that. Jessamine made her way slowly over to the Hereward's airlock and then leaned against the hatch, pressing her hot, flushed face against the cold metal. She was shaking with shock and reaction to all she'd been through. Not just from the strain of singing with the Ashrai, though her head still swam and her throat was raw with pain, but also from the sheer horror of the fighting she'd witnessed and been a reluctant part of. She'd thought she'd seen the rough side of life before, when she was starting out, seen men kill each other in the cheap clubs and bars she'd played at the start of her career. But this was war, and war was different. All the blood and suffering, the desperate screams of the dying, the knowledge that you could die at any moment if you were slow or stupid or just unlucky enough to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Amid the noise and the bedlam and the sudden stench of freshly spilled guts, she had killed because she had to, and she had no doubts about what she'd done. She had nothing but contempt for the fanatics who made up the Church Militant and pure humanity, but still she shook and shuddered and bit her lip to keep from crying out. She didn't know if she could do it again, not even for Lewis and his cause. Lewis finally noticed her and came quickly over to put a comforting arm around her. She turned and buried her face in his chest and took what comfort she could from him.
Oh, God.
Not too far away, Brett was standing hunched over, his arms wrapped tightly around his aching stomach. He had already vomited till he dry heaved, and it hadn't helped. He was a con man, not a fighter. A thief, not a killer. He didn't want anyone to die, least of all himself. And yet he remembered walking through the trees, making men kill each other and themselves, as though he'd been a whole other person then. Rose stood patiently beside him, not understanding, but keeping him company.
It's over. We won. You fought well enough. You should be proud.
I never wanted this. This isn't me. This isn't what I do. I want to go home.
Things change. After a while, it won't bother you at all.
That's what scares me.
Saturday watched them all and said nothing. Carrion came walking out of the forest along with another man, and both sides were surprised to find the other, knew the newcomer.
You told me John Silence was dead.
That's because we knew him as Samuel Chevron. I knew you had to be someone important from the Age of Heroes, but I had no idea. Are you really him? Captain John Silence of the Dauntless?
I was once. It was a long time ago.
That's how you were able to do all those amazing things in Traitor's Hall.
Jessamine's eyes were almost painfully wide.
Why didn't you tell us? Why did you let everyone think you were dead? And why didn't anyone recognize Samuel Chevron was really one of the great legends of our time?
People see what I want them to see when they look at me.
I've taken care of all five star cruisers.
Carrion smiled at the open awe in the faces of Lewis and Jessamine and Brett. Rose just watched silently.
A few lifeboats got away to tell what happened here. I don't think the Empire will be coming back. I trust the excitement is now over and I can get back to my life.
We were hoping you might come with us, Sir Carrion, to search for the Blessed Owen. We have so much to do.
No, not even for a Death Stalker. Not even for you, John.
Lewis turned to Silence, but he shook his head too.
I go where I'm needed. You don't need me, Deathstalker.
Why haven't you revealed yourself before this? Why did you allow Finn and his people to come to power? Why didn't you stop all the terrible things that have happened?
One man alone can't save the Empire. Even a Deathstalker needs companions.
Why didn't you interfere in the fighting here earlier?
Because you needed the experience.
We could have all been killed!
That's part of what you were learning.
What about the Terror? With your power...
No. That's your destiny, Deathstalker. Go to Hayden. All the answers you seek are there, in the Madness Maze.
Silence turned to look at Carrion.
I have to go, Sean. Tell me, are you happy now you're an Ashrai?
Yes. It's all I ever wanted.
Good. I'm glad one of us at least got to have a happy ending.
They told me you were dead, John.
I am.
And Silence disappeared. Carrion nodded slowly.
Well, this is a planet of ghosts, after all.
He turned back into an Ashrai, huge and powerful, spread his membranous wings, and flew back up into the glowing sky to rejoin his people. It was dark in the king's private chambers. All the blinds were drawn, and the door was securely locked. And Douglas Campbell, last favored son of a noble line, speaker to the House of Parliament, and chosen king of humanity's greatest empire, sat alone in his opulent chambers, wrapped in a faded old dressing gown and nothing else, unshaven and disheveled, staring at nothing. His once handsome face was slack, his eyes were empty, and what thoughts he had were slow and sullen, of no importance to anyone, not even himself. Douglas couldn't bring himself to give a damn about the person knocking at the door. They'd give up eventually and go away, leaving him alone, just like everyone else. He'd sent them all away, friends and colleagues and servants, driving them from him with harsh words and bitter language. He needed to be alone with his pain, and he had no use anymore for words like duty or responsibility. He had a lot of brooding and second-guessing and feeling sorry for himself to do, and he had just enough dignity left that he didn't want anyone to see him like this, especially not the servants. For all their smiles and kind words and signed loyalty oaths, there wasn't one he'd trust not to go running off to the media with their story, if the price was right. Once that would have been unthinkable, but then a lot of things had been unthinkable once. Before his closest friend had betrayed him with the only woman he'd ever really loved. He wasn't sure how long he'd sat alone in the dark, trying not to think or feel or care. He didn't do much anymore. Mostly he just sat in his chair, ate and drank when he remembered, and spent as much time dozing and sleeping as he could, because then he didn't have to remember how his whole life had gone to hell. He hadn't shaved or bathed in ages and didn't care. He had a bowl of something lukewarm in his lap that he didn't remember preparing. He couldn't remember whether it was supposed to be breakfast or dinner, but now and again he ate some of it with his fingers. It didn't taste of anything much. He was a mess, and he knew it. Somehow, that seemed fitting. The view screen before him hadn't been turned on in days. At first, he'd kept it on all the time, for a kind of company. He had sat slumped in front of the screen like an acolyte, flicking numbly through the hundreds of news channels, in the hope of finding someone who could explain to him how everything in his life could have gone so terribly wrong so quickly. But all the news channels could do was drive home in merciless detail just how quickly his precious golden age was deteriorating into something far darker by its own perverse will. It seemed like there was no good news anymore. The Church Militant was now the Empire's official religion, in all the ways that mattered. Thousands of fanatics marched down city streets on hundreds of worlds, holding up blazing crosses, loudly proclaiming their vicious faith, and damning all unbelievers. Pure humanity had also seized the public mood and made it their own, and everywhere hatred was lashing out at anyone or anything that could be declared inhuman. Aspers, aliens, and anyone who wasn't pure humanity or Church Militant. It was a dangerous time to be a free thinker. Heretics could be hunted down and butchered in busy streets, and no one would raise a finger to help them. The news shows weren't openly biased yet, but the signs were already there if you knew what to look for, in the words the commentators didn't use, in the language they didn't condemn, in the causes and people who couldn't even get airtime anymore. Douglas grew tired watching it all fall apart. All the sane voices were gone. Most of the politicians were running scared. The old church had vanished with its gentle patriarch, and the paragons had set off on their great quest to find the missing Owen Deathstalker. So far, there was no sign of the blessed Owen anywhere, and a few paragons had already returned, abandoning and renouncing the quest as useless. There was no news at all of Lewis Deathstalker and his treacherous companions. Douglas couldn't decide whether that was good news or bad news. All he knew for sure was that he didn't recognize what his world and his empire had become. So he had turned off the view screen and sat alone in the growing gloom, feeling lost and broken and useless. Douglas looked vaguely around. Someone had a key, which should have been impossible. The light flooded into the room. Douglas put up a hand to protect his watering eyes and peered painfully at the dark silhouette in his doorway. He hadn't called for anyone. He hadn't called for anyone in ages. He wondered if his guards had finally betrayed him too. And then the thought came to him that perhaps the new savage empire had decided that it didn't want or need a king anymore, and had sent someone to put him out of its misery. Anger flooded through him, pushing back the accumulated lethargy.
I thought I told you!
He lurched up out of his chair, swaying unsteadily on his feet as he glared about him for his weapons. But he couldn't think what he'd done with his gun or his sword, let alone his armor, so he snatched up a heavy wooden footstool and glared defiantly at the figure in the doorway, determined to sell his life dearly.
God, Douglas, you're a mess. You look awful and you smell worse. What have you done to yourself?
Douglas slowly lowered the footstool to his side as his old friend Anne stalked forwards into his chambers, looking about her.
Some people just shouldn't be allowed to live alone. I spent months sorting out just the right furnishings for this room, and you've turned it into a dump.
She made her way quickly around the room and opened the blinds. Daylight flooded the chamber.
And by the way, your guards are rubbish. I was able to bully and intimidate my way past them far too easily. I've replaced them with some of my own people. And put down that footstool before you strain yourself.
Douglas put down the footstool and then did his best to stand up straight. It wasn't easy. His legs were unsteady, and the new light was giving him a killer headache. But it was one thing for him to admit to himself how far he'd let himself go, and quite another to see the knowledge in Anne's eyes. He pulled his dressing gown tightly around him and did his best to meet her accusing gaze with one of his own.
What are you doing here, Anne? I didn't send for you. How the hell did you get in here anyway? The door was locked.
I have a key. I am your head of security, remember?
And I'm here because you haven't sent for anyone in 2 months now. Some people already think you're dead, and that's a luxury you can't afford anymore, Douglas. It's time for you to return to the world. There's an important media event happening in just over an hour from now, and your presence is very much required.
Douglas sat down again.
I don't have to be anywhere, Anne. The Empire doesn't need a king anymore, if it ever did. I saw the news shows. It's an asylum out there.
The times are changing, and so we have to change with them.
Anne came to a halt before him, hands on hips, glaring down at him.
Look, I really don't have time for this, Douglas. Something really important has happened that affects you personally. You and the whole damned Empire. Right now, I need you to get cleaned up, climb into your very best, and come with me. You can be depressed and depressing on your own time. Well, don't just sit there on your feet into your bedroom and get changed, and don't hang about, or I'll come in there and help you get dressed, and I've got really cold hands.
Douglas scowled at her as he rose reluctantly to his feet.
Same old Anne.
Except that wasn't strictly true. Douglas still had trouble getting used to how much his old friend had changed physically. For as long as he'd known her, Anne Barclay had always been short and stocky, with a square, determined face topped by brutally short red hair. She wore smartly cut suits of uniform gray and strode everywhere in a manner that suggested everyone else had better get the hell out of her way. She ran her security people like her own private army, was always on top of every problem, and was intimidatingly efficient. And about as glamorous as a sledgehammer. But a lot of things had changed since the old days, not least Anne Barclay. The new Anne was tall and willowy, with pale, perfect skin and a great mane of long, flowing crimson tresses. Her face, and especially her chin, had been subtly redesigned to more fashionably feminine lines, and she now also possessed a quite magnificent bosom. Anne had been to the body shops and had paid a not-so-small fortune to have herself remade in the image of her private dreams. She'd got her money's worth. She was drop-dead gorgeous now. But for all her dazzling silk dress and elegant makeup, she still moved like the old Anne, striding everywhere and standing like a soldier. She had no style to her, no grace. She might be beautiful now, but she moved as though she didn't really believe it. Being feminine was a new thing for her. Douglas stopped at the door to his bedroom and looked back at her.
Why did you do it, Anne? You never cared about what you looked like before. You never cared about what anyone thought of you. So why the makeover? Why give up being you?
Because I chose to. You only thought you knew me. You never knew what I wanted, what I really wanted. And you never cared enough to find out. I was just there to be used, to be useful. Well, I haven't changed inside. I'm still me, and I've got a job to do, and so have you, Douglas. We've all indulged your protracted sulk long enough. Your seclusion's over, as of now, and no, you don't get a say in the matter. Finn and I have protected you as long as we could, but now something's come up, and you're needed.
Something's happened. Have they found Jessamine and Lewis?
No, not yet. Not everything is about you and them, Douglas.
Is it the Terror? Has it reached another planet already?
Douglas tried desperately to work out how much time he'd lost. Had Anne really said 2 months?
No, it's still 4 months and 3 days before the Terror is expected to hit Heracles IV. This is something new, something unanticipated. It's not anything I can explain. You have to see this for yourself in person, and you can't do it looking like that. Get dressed. Full kingly apparel, including the crown. After so long out of the public eye, you can't afford to appear in front of the cameras looking anything but your best.